Last week at the Rosh Hashanah morning service, I gave you all a homework assignment to prepare. 5 extra credit points to anybody who can tell the person next to them what it was. In case you need a reminder, the assignment was to imagine what it would be like to live in the next year as a Lamed Vavnik, as one of those 36 righteous people for whose sake the world continues to exist. How will you act? What will you do? How will you use your words and deeds to reflect your values? How will you fully live your values in the year to come? Well, friends, tonight that assignment is due. Ushers, would you please hand out the blue books and the number 2 pencils? Those of you at home, supplies will be arriving by drone. You'll have 15 minutes to complete your essay. Okay, I won't really make you write out your assignment. After all, I'm not the one evaluating you this holiday. We know that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur can feel like one big test or even a trial. Courtroom imagery is clearly present in our High Holy Day prayers. The liturgy and tradition are filled with the metaphor of God on high sitting in judgment of us and decreeing our destiny. We pray to be judged worthy to be written and sealed in the book of life for the coming year. It can be a little overbearing, a little frightening, a little melodramatic, and a little disconcerting. I've mentioned before that this isn't an image of God that most of us are comfortable with in the modern era. It's certainly not how I understand my relationship with God 355 days of the year. But for me, this image of God does resonate during these 10-day High Holy Day season. Whether the tradition is correct and this is what God actually does during these days, or whether it's a metaphor that forces us to confront and account for our choices and our actions, there's utility in the image of trials and testing, even if we don't take it literally. So, as your rabbi, and because I like you and I want you to pass this test, I will help you with your homework assignment. I don't promise that I have all of the answers, but tonight maybe we'll gain some insight together on how to live our values in the year to come. Now, to figure that out, we're going to use something called backwards design, which is an educational theory that says first we must identify our end goal and then create a process by which to reach it. So we start with a question. What would our lives look like if we truly lived our values each and every day? Well, I learned from Rabbi Dr. Aaron Penkin of blessed memory a teaching from Jewish tradition that I think can help us answer that question. You see, in the book of Genesis, when Abraham is getting older, the Torah tells us, V'Avraham Zakin Ba Bayamim, which most literally means Abraham was old, coming into the days. Usually in a translation, it's something like Abraham was old, advanced in years. Our biblical commentators observe that one phrase would have been sufficient to describe Abraham's age. The Torah is not known for being overly wordy. So why do we need both Zaken and Ba Bayamim, both old and advanced in years? Now, it may just be that Ba Bayamim is an idiom in Hebrew to describe someone who is getting on in years. Indeed, in all 7 places in the Bible where the phrase Ba Bayamim appears, they all refer to people getting old. But the text I learned from Rabbi Penkin has a different explanation. It's a commentary on this verse from the Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Elijah, one of the great sages of the 18th century. He applies a passage from the Zohar, the central text of Jewish mysticism, to this verse about Abraham. And in doing so, the Gaon finds a different way to interpret the phrase Ba Bayamim. Again, taken literally, the words refer to Abraham coming into the days. But the Gaon translates it as the days came, letting the verb refer to the actions of the days themselves, not Abraham. This, he teaches, relates to a scene at the heavenly court. The Gaon writes, "When a person passes from this world, all of his days come to give account before the Holy One of Blessing, to show for a righteous person that not one day went by in his years without Torah and mitzvot. But this isn't the case for the wicked. Their days hide themselves and are embarrassed to draw close to the Holy One of Blessing. The days don't come, for they are guilty. For all a wicked person's days were in sin and transgression, and his days hide themselves from coming before the Holy One. The Gaon is imagining each day anthropomorphized, coming and individually testifying on Abraham's behalf. Because Abraham was righteous, his days were able to attend his judgment and be witnesses for him before God. That's why the passage has both phrases to describe Abraham's age. He was old, and his days came to testify on his behalf. What a fascinating image that must be. Can you picture the scene for your own life? When we die, if there have been days when we brought our values to life, then those days, personified and individualized, literally stand before God as character witnesses for our goodness. But if there were days when we did sinful or hurtful things, when we failed to live our values, the days themselves are embarrassed to come before God, and they can't testify to our goodness. Obviously, we want as many of our days as possible to be eligible. We want to line them up as witnesses for us. That's our end goal for this assignment, to live our values each day so that that day can testify on our behalf if we are called to judgment at the end of our life. Now, a few years ago, the columnist David Brooks actually made a similar assertion, although from a secular perspective and without the anthropomorphized days of the calendar. In an article published a few years ago called The Moral Bucket Lists, which he adapted from his book The Road to Character, Brooks posits that there are two kinds of values, or virtues as he calls them, resume virtues and eulogy virtues. He writes, "The resume virtues are the skills you bring to the marketplace. The eulogy virtues are the ones that are talked about at your funeral, whether you were kind, brave, honest, or faithful." Among these eulogy virtues, Brooks includes humility, self-awareness, the willingness to ask for help, connection to others, and energizing love. Although the world around us incentivizes us to focus on the resume virtues, Brooks argues that we should be truly trying harder to cultivate our eulogy virtues. We should be aware of what we do in the world such that people will say good things about us when we have died. That may feel a little counterintuitive to think about living this way. After all, it is our resume virtues that will get us a job, earn us a living, help us advance in life. But is that how we want to be remembered? When I sit with a family who has recently had a loss, I ask them to tell me about their loved ones. We usually start with biographical details, including birthplace and schooling and occupational accomplishments, but the deeply meaningful stories come out when we move beyond that information to the type of person the deceased was. They generous with time or money, eager to help people or connect with friends, passionate about hobbies or interests. It's the eulogy values that best express who we are. Too often, Brooke believes, we spend time burnishing our resume and end up living life less authentically or meaningfully. Living in such a way that our eulogy is one that we can be proud of is the better way to be. So for Brooks, it's more what the speakers at your funeral will say than what animate Tuesdays or Wednesdays from the calendar will attest. Nevertheless, it's the same notion. We should live our true values each and every day. We should live so that we are remembered how we most want to be remembered. Well, working backwards, we next ask, what are the values that we are trying to live? Well, friends, that's going to be a personal question, of course. As each of us discerns what values we center and hold dear for ourselves, I can't give you a definitive list of your values. You will need to determine those for yourself. But I can give you some advice as to where and how we find these values. In a word, Judaism. What else did you think a rabbi was going to say? There is all of Jewish teaching and tradition, 5,000 years worth of wisdom from which to choose. On the one hand, that's great. The range of choices, of values to live is wide and varied, and there are so many from which to pick our focus. On the other hand, that's a bit overwhelming. The choice of values to live are wide and varied, and there are so many from which to pick. If you Google Jewish values, you will get a vast array of resources. There are books, ancient and modern, written on the topic. Rabbi Joseph Tolushkin wrote one of the most widely known examples called The Book of Jewish Values, a day-by-day guide to ethical living. The Foundation for Jewish Camp published a chart of Jewish values called Making Menches, a Periodic Table, where Jewish values like rachamim, compassion, anava, humility, sakranut, curiosity, hakarat hatov, gratitude, and ahava, love, they are all listed in little boxes like the table of chemical elements. Here at TBS, Rabbi Perlin famously had a list of Jewish values for our B'nai Mitzvah students. After studying values like kavod, dignity, or simcha, joy, bal tashchit, care for our environment, and tzedek, justice, her students would select one to make the focus of their bar bat mitzvah project and speak about it from the bima. My teacher, Rabbi Dr. Eugene Borowitz of blessed memory, once taught a seminar based on the 13th century text by Yechiel ben Yekutiel called Sefer Ma'alot Hamidot, the Book of Choices Virtues. Delving into 24 different Jewish values selected by Yechiel, Dr. Borowitz updated their teaching for the 21st century. And the list includes emunah, trustworthiness, chesed, loving kindness, nedivut, generosity, and shalom, peace. Dr. Borowitz and educator Francie Schwartz turned that seminar into a book called The Jewish Moral Virtues, and this will be the text for our Lunch and Learn sessions this coming year. If you'd like to explore their list of values and help you select yours, be sure to join in and watch for other learning opportunities from our LIFE program this year, all about Jewish values. Picking the values we wish to live is an exercise we engage with sometimes with our religious school students. At the beginning of the year, some of our classes explore Jewish values in developing their list of rules for the classroom. Bonnie Cowdery's second grade class, for example, selected act with kavod, respect, treat others the way you want to be treated, listen to the talker, clean up your stuff, and keep your body parts to yourself. Now, I wasn't in the room as they made the selection of their values, but knowing our students and their teacher, I am certain it was done with great intentionality. For me, personally, there are two Jewish values that I try to bring to life in everything I do. The first is from the Holiness Code, Leviticus chapter 19, Kidoshim tihiyu ki kadosh ani Adonai Eloheichem. You shall be holy, for I, Adonai, your God, am holy. As God is kadosh, I am called to be kadosh in all of my interactions, my words, and my deeds. My second value is from the story of creation, where we are told that human beings are created, B'Tselem Elohim, in the divine image. If I know that God is holy, and that I'm supposed to treat God with kavod, dignity, and respect, and you and I are both created in God's image, with a spark of the divine within us, then I know how I'm supposed to treat you, and I know how I'm supposed to treat myself. I hold these two values as my guiding principles to try and make them real in my life every single day. So, checking in on our assignment on this Kol Nidre night, we know that our end goal is to live a life of values. And let's say that we've picked our values and tried to live them all year long. What if we can't? What if it proves too difficult to do? What if we fail sometimes? Spoiler alert, we will, because we are all human beings. Does that mean that we are fated to have a mediocre eulogy at our funeral? Are we doomed to have just a few of our days show up at the heavenly court to testify on our behalf? What if we aren't perfect in living our values all of the time? Well, there's an oft-told story that addresses that worry, and this version of it was crafted by my colleague, Rabbi Rachel Greengrass. She writes, "There once was a girl named Sarit who grew up on her family's farmland in the country. That meant working on the farm, which is hard work. Between helping out on the farm and her schoolwork, Sarit didn't have a lot of spare time. She also didn't have a lot of neighbors, as the neighbors had farms of their own. But one year, she heard that a new family had bought the farm next door and that they had a kid about her age. So when she was done with her chores, she excitedly ran next door to introduce herself and maybe to make a new friend. When she knocked on the neighbor's door and introduced herself, she was told to go around to the back of the barn where their son Adam, who was about her age, was practicing shooting his bow and arrow. She ran around back and saw a kid her age putting away his bow and arrows. She walked over to introduce herself. After they told each other their names, and Adam told her about how his family ended up leaving the city and buying the farm next door to hers, Sarit turned around expecting to see a straw target that Adam had been shooting at. Instead, what she saw was that the whole side of the barn had arrows sticking out of it. He had been shooting at the side of the barn, not at a target, but each and every arrow was in the center of a bullseye painted on the wall of the barn. Adam explained that they would be taking down the old barn soon, so his parents were okay with him shooting arrows at it, at least for now. Well, wow! Sarit had tried to shoot an arrow before, but she was a terrible shot. Adam looked to be a perfect shot. This was her chance to finally have a friend living next door, and clearly he loved archery, so Sarit went home and grabbed her old archery set and went out in her backyard to try and improve. She took her first shot, and it went far to the left. So she adjusted and shot her second arrow, and that one flew far to the right. She was so angry at herself. How could she be so bad at this? Her dad saw her and came to help, and he told her how when you miss the mark, you need to take a deep breath and let it go, and that she shouldn't try to overcompensate. You just move a hair over and try again. This time, she caught the edge of the target. Sarit practiced for weeks following her dad's advice. She kept moving a hair, and then another, until she became pretty good at hitting pretty close to the bullseye. She kept improving, but she was still nowhere near as good as Adam was. But after a time, she thought maybe she was good enough at least not to embarrass herself. She went next door and asked Adam if he wanted to go shoot some arrows at the barn with her. She was really nervous. What if he made fun of her? What if she wasn't good enough? But she tried to tell herself just to try her best, and if she missed the mark, to breathe and adjust. When they got to the barn, she took a shot at one of the painted-on targets, and she did really well. She got within a couple inches of the bullseye. Adam said, "Wow, that's amazing! Where did you learn to shoot like that?" Sarit felt hurt. Was he teasing her? His arrows never missed. She took a deep breath and said, "I know I'm not as good as you, but I am trying my best." "Not as good as me," Adam replied. I'm a terrible shot." "What are you talking about?" Sarit said. "Every arrow up there is in the center of a bullseye." "Oh," Adam laughed. "You see, I shoot the arrows, and then wherever they hit, I go and I paint the bullseye around it." Sarit was stunned. She had thought Adam was a perfect shot. She thought she had to be perfect. But in reality, that perfection wasn't real. "I wish I was as good as you," Adam admitted. "Well," said Sarit, "I can teach you what I know. You aim for the center knowing you're going to miss, because no one is perfect all the time. And when you do miss, you take a deep breath and let it go and adjust a little bit at a time." Sarit and Adam practiced shooting for a while, knowing that that was good advice for archery and for life. Not a subtle story. But there's a good message in there for us on this night of nights. Our Kol Nidre prayer acknowledges we might miss the mark in our vows and our promises, in our words and our deeds. And when we do miss, after honest effort, after trying our best, we can be absolved and forgiven. And then we try again. The challenge for us this coming year, our homework assignment for these high holy days, is to keep trying to hit the mark. Spend some time discerning the values by which you want to live and to be remembered. Figure out the principles that you want to guide you this year. Try to live them day by day. And if you don't fully succeed, take a deep breath, let it go, and try again the next day. That is what it means to work at being a Lamed Vavnik. That is what it means to craft a life such that our days will come and testify on our behalf. That is what it means to live a life of values. May our efforts to find and live our values be successful in this new year. May we live our eulogy values and not just our resume ones. May each day be one that will testify on our behalf as a day well lived. May we be signed and sealed for a good new year.